Huh. We'll start over. Need a live mic. Good evening. This is the regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board, City of Morro Bay's Harbor Advisory Board. It's Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. We're meeting in the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street in Morro Bay. And we have a quorum. All members are present. This evening, the commercial fisherman's seat has a rotating, three rotating fishermen, and this evening, Jeremiah O'Brien is back with us. So, welcome. So we'll call the meeting to order, and a moment of silence, please. Thank you. And the Pledge of Allegiance. So the next item on our agenda is announcements and presentations from the chair, from the board members, and from our city council liaison, if Mr. Makowetski has any. So, Matt, we'll start with you. Nothing? Okay. Bill? Dana? Neil? Lynn?
Nothing.
Okay. Jeremiah?
Well, I am out of touch, so some of this news might not be news to some of you, but it's news to me on my return from up north.
Fake news.
In my absence while we were gone up north, a few shrimp boats have showed up and have done remarkably well here and locally for a short time, and also a handful of squid boats have showed up and have been doing very well. Very unfortunately for everybody, one of the squid boats had an accident that proved fatal to one of the crew and the whole community feels very, very, very bad about that, and the boat remains here in Morro Bay. It was unfortunately a bad albacore for the West Coast of the United States, bad albacore year for the West Coast of the United States, and the landings will probably be somewhere in the order, projected to be on the order of 50% of our normal output for the entire West Coast. We've had actually a few decades of extremely good fishing. This was kind of a surprise to everybody, including the processors. So we're just hoping next year we'll see a reversal, and it's not a trend. The Maritime Museum also had a get-together the other day, and there is a Kelsey C. Canyon Vineyards has launched a new series of wine dedicated to it's called their Maritime Series, and the first bottle of wine was called the Alma. It's a Zinfandel, and I can't tell you where it's currently available, but it is the Kelsey Sea Canyon Vineyards, and so we can look forward to many more dedicated to the Maritime Series in the future, and some of the proceeds from this wine will go directly to the Maritime Museum. Thank you.
Do you happen to know who the owners of that winery are, Jeremiah?
You know, I don't. We met them. Dana.
I was at the event also, and that's Keith Kelsey and his family. They used to own Sylvester Tugs and have moved into the wine business for some years out in Sea Canyon. It's good wine, and I think there might be some available at our at the city's Harbor Advisory Board appreciation evening, December 4th, at the Yacht Club.
Thank you. Gene?
Yeah, an update on our waterfront down there. The bay has kind of got red tide in it right now. All our little anchovies that have grown up to about 5 or 6 inches, they've all kind of moved out. We still have the pelicans, but the bay's still going in and out, and it looks pretty good. So.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. This is the general public comment period. Public comment for anything that is not on the agenda, or public comment for something that's on the agenda for anyone who cannot stay until that agenda comes up. Please come to the mic, identify yourself. And
is this on? Yep, sounds like it is.
It is.
Good evening. My name is Ray Fields, and I'm actually a resident of San Luis Obispo, but a longtime resident here in the county. And my wife and I are starting a pedal taxi business, and we're in the process of going around to different communities to try and get permits and licenses to operate. And we think that Morro Bay might be a great candidate down on the Embarcadero. Parking can be pretty tight down there on busy days, and it's a long ways to walk from one end to the other. And we think people might enjoy a pedal taxi ride from out to the rock to see this see the sea otters or back to the Natural History Museum. You have that fantastic bicycle pedestrian bridge now that goes over to the trailer parks for people camp there and things like that. So when I contacted the city, I found out that we don't really fit in the business box because we don't have a leasehold down there on the waterfront. And so this may or may not come up on the agenda. I'm not sure, but I thought I'd just take public comment to tell you what we're interested in doing and see if maybe we could just start with a business license from the city of Morro Bay and operate on the Embarcadero down there and give it a try. So Eric and Lori have our contact info and a letter with some of our ideas on our business. And if you have any questions, I can answer them. But otherwise, I just wanted to be here personally to tell you what we're thinking and see if we can't give it a try in Morro Bay.
Okay,
thank
before
you.
Before you leave the mic, any questions, comments?
Yeah, exactly what type of vehicle and so forth,
okay.
Ray, would you be interested in?
So a pedal taxi, we already have it. For people who don't know, it's basically a tricycle. You pedal it like a bicycle. It's got a little seat in the back. It holds two or three adults, two comfortably, maybe three. They're quite popular in San Francisco. You see them on the Embarcadero giving people rides around. It's brand new. It's made here in the United States, made in Montana. It's got turn signals, headlights, brake lights, safety belt. So it's purpose built for that. It has all the safety equipment. Looks nice.
Thanks, Ray, very much. Good luck with that, too.
Thank you.
Dinner?
You'll have some kind of base of operation? I mean, just basically where you park them?
We park it at our house in San Luis. So when we worked in Morro Bay, we have a little trailer. We'd bring it out here, unload it, and work here and take it home.
Okay, so it's just basically a parking spot. Is
exactly.
Okay.
Some place to unload.
Good luck.
Bill? Do you operate in any other city right now?
We are in the process of getting permission to operate in other cities, primarily San Luis. A lot of red tape. So, you know, we're plugging away. We have a city business license, which gives us, so we can work in any of the unincorporated areas of the community, like if we want to do events, things like that. But the only cities we've started the process with are San Luis Obispo and now Morro Bay.
Okay. Thank you.
And can you share with us where you are in the process? First of all, what is the process, if you know, for Morro Bay, and where are you in the process?
In Morro Bay, we sent a letter to the city. My wife made the initial contact. I'm not sure who we sent it to, but it ended up at Lori's desk. And so we had some conversations there, and basically since it's on the waterfront, it doesn't, most of the waterfront businesses, as I understand it, and she can correct me if I'm wrong, typically have a lease because they are a physical location on the waterfront. And so there wasn't necessarily a process that they could just issue us any kind of license or permission to operate. So they may be bringing it up in tonight's agenda. I don't know. But like I said, I thought I'd just come here personally and let you know.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for your job. Lynn?
So you would be kind of cruising up and down the Embarcadero and picking people up like
exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, no, go slow so people catch your eye and, you know, you catch their eye, and that's the way it works. Yep.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your consideration. I appreciate
it. Any other public comment at this time for anything that's not on the agenda or something that will be on the agenda that you can't stay for?
Good evening. My name is Joe Chikowski. I run the Morrowbay Boatyard. And I heard you guys are going to impose a new tax, some on the waterfront. And I'd like to know how that's going to impact my business.
Joe, first of all, this body doesn't do taxation. The city council does taxation. I have not heard anything about that, and I know nothing about it.
Well, I thought it's the Harbor Advisory that's going to okay it. So, Eric, how is that working?
What you need to do, Joe's problem, I'm assuming you're probably talking about our agenda item C6 for consideration of a licensing or permitting process for various businesses that are working on our waterfront.
Well, I just heard rumors, so that's why I'm here.
Rumors are great, but rumors are rumors. Item C6, I think, is what you're talking about. There's no tax that's being imposed. We're considering setting up a licensing or permitting process by which various businesses operating on the waterfront would be subject to boat mechanics, boat cleaners. I'll use Gene Dowdy as an example, guy doing mooring inspections, that sort of thing. And really, I'm getting ahead of you. You need to stick around for item C6. For something that, like you, that's already an existing operating business on our waterfront, although it's not on leased property, you wouldn't be subject to it. You're already subject to the leasehold interest.
Oh, okay, well, good.
The Myers.
Glad to hear it.
But stick around if you want to see what it's all about.
All right. Thank you.
Can't go too much about it.
Okay. Anything else? Any other item for public comment at this time? Let's go. Seeing none, we'll move along. So that brings us to A1. A1 is approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting that was held on September 7th, 2017. Do we have any corrections for those minutes? Seeing none, motion to approve. Neil moves. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Call the vote. All in favor of approval of the minutes from the meeting held on September 7th?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes. A2, approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on October 5, 2017. Any comments or corrections from the board to those minutes? Seeing none. Oh, Gene?
I had found a typo somewhere, but I can't find it now, so I'll just come back with that later.
Okay.
Is it just a
simple,
non-substantive typo? All right, you find it later. We'll deal with it later.
Okay. Anything else? Motion to approve?
Mm-hmm.
Lynn moves. Is there a second? Dana, a second? Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No opposition. Passes. Brings us to B1, Harbor Department Status Report. Mr. Director?
Thank you, and welcome back for another meeting. Fairly lengthy things to report on, so I'll try and be quick as usual. Statistics, nothing out of the ordinary, 22 emergency responses, 114 calls for service, a bunch of assist to other agencies, some enforcement contacts, weather warnings. As you know, winter's coming on, so we're starting to get some weather. Looks like maybe getting the first little bit tonight. We had one hazardous bar warning, so
The ocean, the North Pacific Ocean, is awake and starting to send swell our way, so those of you out there in Boaterland, be sure you check the internet or with the Harbor Patrol or Coast Guard before you head out if there's any big swell running to see what the conditions are, because it's that time of the year. On October 1st, we were dispatched to a capsized kayaker out on the Finger Jetty. We got them transferred to our Harbor Patrol boat and assessed, and they were okay. They were in the water for a fair amount of time and had didn't really show any signs of hypothermia, but they'd been in there a while, and they'd been helped out by some other folks, some good Samaritans, so good for them for being helped out. That one turned out okay. As you know, kayakers capsize pretty regularly, and normally you wouldn't think somebody falling out of a kayak would be an emergency, but given the currents and cold water we have, and depending on where they are, we consider them an emergency anytime, and so respond accordingly. On October 4th, we had a little day sailor capsize near the harbor entrance. That operator was assisted in riding that and getting them, getting their belongings that were scattered about back onto their boat, and they sailed back to the yacht club on their own. Had another day sailor on the 5th off Marina Square. Same fellow, different location. He was re-rided and escorted back to the yacht club. It was a pretty high wind afternoon that day, so that was his problem. And also on the 5th, we had another kayaker capsize off the launch ramp. Both of those two folks were successfully gotten out of the water okay. On October 17th, we had a Mayday call for an overtide kayak with one person on the water off Spooner's Cove. We responded along with Coast Guard to that incident. That fellow was rescued by our rescue watercraft. Basically, our jet ski went down there and assisted. Any kind of surf rescue now will generally, depending on who we have on duty and who the fire department has on duty, because they send us personnel as well, we'll generally send a jet ski down there into the surf rescue realm and send a patrol boat as well, and the Coast Guard will go as well. So that one turned out okay as well. We got the victim ashore, transported him back to the beach there at Spooner's Cove, where the Cal Fire folks took him over, and he was no injuries, and he was released. And then on the 8th, the Coast Guard received a call from the Sheriff Department reporting a overturned kayak off of Via Creek, which is just below the Abalone Farm, above Cayucas, and a person missing. We responded to that, Coast Guard, Cal Fire. I believe eventually we got a CHP helicopter. Had a lot of folks looking. We definitely had a person missing that we unfortunately were not able to find. Did search patterns until dark. I think Coast Guard worked into dark. A lot of folks on land, but unfortunately we didn't find the victim. But on October 21st, the body of that victim washed ashore very nearby. Unfortunately, local Santa Maria fellow. So just want to underscore, you know, if you're out there on the water on a kayak, make sure you got flotation. I don't believe that victim was wearing a life jacket, and it was pretty heavy seas. I think we had a pretty good-sized south swell running at that time and a pretty good-sized northwest as well. And it's getting into that season again, folks, where the ocean is livening up. So what may have been good okay back in June or July isn't good anymore, so you got to be aware of the ocean conditions and be prepared. October 9th, we received a call from the Coast Guard of another capsized canoe in the water near the entrance of the harbor. Folks in the water about 10 minutes, we responded. The victims had made it to the beach. One of our patrolmen jumped into waist-deep water and assisted them. Those two victims, one was mildly hypothermic. They'd been in the water about 30 minutes, and they were transported and warmed up back at the Harbor Patrol office. And we went back and retrieved their canoe and got them reconnected with their property, so that one turned out okay. And then, as Jeremiah said, on October 19th, around midnight, Coast Guard was contacted about the fishing vessel Pamela Rose had a catastrophic mast and rigging failure that killed one of the crewmen, and sent another one to the hospital. He was medevaced out, I believe, by the Coast Guard, and went to, let's say, Twin Cities, where he's reported in stable condition. I haven't heard an update recently. It sounded like he was doing okay. But the Coast Guard's investigating that incident. The boat was towed back to the harbor, and then they were able to fire up on their own and get back over to the T pier. But unfortunately, that one fellow perished. And thoughts go out to the family on that one. And then on the 21st, we had a report of five people and two canoes stuck in the mud in the back bay with darkness pending. Another warning to boaters out there, you go into our bay and during high tide, it looks like you got acres and acres and acres of navigable water out there, and the tide goes out, and you've got acres and acres and acres of mud. So just be aware of the tides. Watch the tide books. Make sure you stay in deep water. Those folks, we couldn't get to them. They were too far away from any navigable channels for us to get to. But Cal Fire worked into the night and eventually worked their way out there and got those folks out, safely out. So we seem to get three or four of those a year. Folks just get themselves in bad spots, so be aware of that. Can get bad in the wintertime when it gets cold and dark early, so folks just need to be aware of that. Council activity on October 12th, Council approved a new employment contract for city manager for Scott Collins to serve as a new city manager for City of Morro Bay. Wish our welcome to Scott. He's currently an assistant city manager up in the city of Santa Cruz. He comes from a family of public servants. His father's went through, was a public servant, and I believe his sister as well has worked for different cities. So we welcome Scott to the fold. He starts Monday. I believe he's going to be working 4 days a week for a few weeks till he gets his family acclimated down here, and then he starts up full time. And then, not on my list here, but just started today, and I think I've got to mention one of my staff reports. We've got a new finance director as well. She started today full time with the city and is fully on board, and they've got a couple other personnel that they're hiring there up as well up at finance. So her first job is going to be really getting their finance folks back up to speed. So Jennifer Calloway, again, she is on here. She's coming on board today, and wish her well and hope she does well as well. Also on the 10th, the City Council approved a conditional use permit for the House of Juju Lee site. For existing restaurant, Harbor Walk, public access improvements, and improvements adjacent to Anchor Memorial Park. On October 24th, also on the 24th, Council adopted Resolution 5917, authorizing the mayor to execute lease agreements for the Morro Bay Marina lease site. They're basically refinancing that lease site, so Council approved that. And another personnel note, Deputy City Manager Iconi, I'll probably butcher his last name. We all butcher his last name. Iconi T, you'll just leave it at that. He's been in charge of the city's economic development, tourism, IT, and recreation services for about a year now. He's given notice he's moving on as assistant city manager for the city of Santa Paula. His last day will be the 17th of this month, so we wish Iconi well. So if you run into him, wish him well if you could. On the fishing front, I think Jeremiah covered most of it. Dungeness crab season north of Mendocino starts November 15th. You'll see a lot of gear staged all over town as guys are pulling it out of storage and starting to gear their boats up. Recreational Dungeness season starts in a couple of days here, November 4th. And
what about the last year we had that issue with the demonic demote? How is it this year? Any just curiosity, Jeremiah?
At this time, everything looks clear on the California coast.
Yeah.
Very, very slight amount, I believe, in Oregon, but it should not impact their season, which starts another month from now.
As a corollary to that, and not a fishery here, but the lobster season down in Southern California, they've shut down portions of the Channel Islands for that very same reason to the commercial sector. Interestingly, Jeremiah and I were talking about this yesterday. We had a road trip together up to the Santa Cruz area. And, the commercial fisheries closed for lobster, but the recreational is still open. So you can go poison yourself recreationally, but not commercially. So I don't quite get that. But so hopefully, knock on wood, that doesn't happen to the commercial Dungeness season this year. Upcoming events on the 5th, the Morro Bay Triathlon occurring. That's this weekend in Morro Bay. It's an in-bay event for the swim, and they do a run and a bike ride as well. So look for their website, morrobaytri.com. On the 4th, also this weekend, underwater dive cleanup sponsored by Depth Perceptions Dive Services, 9 to 12. I'm not sure the exact location. At the launch ramp? Okay, so they're doing the launch ramp area and some of the slips down the launch ramp area, so we haven't been down there in a long time. So they wander around year to year and take different areas up, so they'll be doing that. November 11th and 12th, there's a WESA surf competition. At the Rock, WSA is a longtime organization of surfing events, and there's a local here now that's, I think his kids are involved in WSA, and he's trying to get WSA to be more active in this area and put us on the map and their schedule as well, so that'll be a good event, hopefully. The 23rd of November to December 12th, the Tall Ships Lady Washington and Hawaiian Chieftain will be here again. I believe they'll be again at Marina Square, and they'll offer some day cruises, but they'll have dockside tours there as well. There's three parts to the Lighted Boat Parade this year. It's changing a little bit. It's being spread over three nights. We've got on December 1st, which is a Friday, the actual parade itself, it's standard first Saturday, which is December 2, is the normal Lighted Boat Parade of all the usual participants that are being judged. On Friday the 1st, the participants are being encouraged to go out on their own and go cruise the bay if they'd like. And then on the 3rd, they're promoting a non-motorized paddle parade. So while the paddle folks can get involved in either Friday or Saturday, they're being encouraged to go in force on the 3rd on Sunday to do a paddle-only event on the bay as well. So we'll see how that turns out. The Winter Bird Festival, December 1 to December 12, that's occurring as well. That's not the Bird Festival? Winter Festival? Oh, sorry. 12 Days of Christmas, a new event being promoted by the city. December 1st to December 12th, various events across town, so look for their website, the City of Morro Bay's website for those events. And December 11th to the 13th are the Carolyn Cops, where the police department goes through on the trolley and the police department escort and does their caroling through different sections of town. And in addition, I think Dana brought it up, Advisory Body Appreciation Evening, December 4th at the Morro Bay Yacht Club for all the advisory bodies like we did last year. So we'll be bringing that event to the club on the 4th. Status of pending Harbor Advisory Board recommendations chart. See if we have anything new. The first box, State Park Marina, the city pursuing the State Park Marina and the cafe concession. We've again reached out to State Parks to try and re-engage them and see if we can get some dialogue going. Haven't gotten anything back yet to date. Still working on the BMP efforts, trying to get those, in addition to all the other harbor rules and regulations, to the HAB in early 2018. On the second page, we've got something on it for the cost allocation. We've got something on the agenda for tonight, so I don't need to cover that. I'm just covering the items that there's an update since our last October meeting, and covering those. Eelgrass, and this, I don't know if it'll come up in our Eelgrass staff report, but we're engaged with Anchor QEA on redoing their, with the input from the Eelgrass subcommittee on revising their proposal for doing some Eelgrass consultancy. And then the new development of the Humboldt Bay report coming out, our policy coming out, will hopefully come into play as they're into that as well. And I believe that's all of them.
Okay, thank you. So questions for the Harbor Director regarding this report, Gene? Jeremiah?
I'm not sure if this is the proper time to. I was asked to bring up a parking situation.
Can't do it.
Oh, okay.
Can't do it. It's not on the agenda. So, Lynn?
Nothing.
Neil? Dana? Bill? Eric, if you could fly through that pending recommendations for me, I have a couple of questions. On the third one, which is has to do with dredging, principally in the State Park Marina, should we continue to carry that item? Is there some, I mean, we were told no, right? I mean,
obviously it didn't work out with the dredger who's still around.
Well, irrespective of that.
Who did the core job. But no, I think it's worth leaving on there.
Okay.
No, I don't think we should pull it.
Okay. And the last item on the first page, which is the Boatyard Marine Services Facility RFQ. Is there a next step? And are you going to address that, Dana, in your report?
I believe it was addressed at the time that
next step. Yeah, next step is put together an RFP for feasibility to go to council for approval.
So we need an update on this document. Next page. The first item, which is the Measure D general plan business. Gene, you're going to get into that? Yeah, okay. The third, you already talked about that one. Third page, first item.
Should probably number these boxes.
That would be helpful, actually. It would help me.
Third page.
Well, we'll wait until Gene's report for that.
Okay.
And then, the last item, which Jeremiah just touched on, but may not have had this in mind when he brought it up. Paid parking establishment on and around the Embarcadero. So the last activity was 10-9, October 9th, 2017, and we're looking for another department to do something. Can we get an update on that?
I don't have one for you tonight, but I can get one. We made our recommendations regarding paid parking, and the process that at least the city council is following right now is planning commission has got it right now, and then eventually it'll get to city council, and I'm assuming I'll make sure that our input follows that process, goes to planning, but goes to city council as well. That would be our input into that process.
So I guess the next question. The next question is, when will the Planning Commission get it on their agenda?
That I do not know.
I wouldn't expect you to, but that's the next item. Okay, thanks. That brings us to C1. Is there any public comment on C1, which is update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee? Seeing no public comment. Dana?
Thank you. Yeah, we have not met, but we're looking forward to the progress of the goals and objectives 1D, work plan element 6, which we spoke about here at the HAB meetings a couple months ago, regarding the boat storage in the triangle lot. Also, we're looking forward to the case study being put together by Robert Sherwood, how to make a small boatyard viable, that he's going to be presenting in January at the International Marinas and Boatyard Conference. So we'll get to preview that before it goes out, is what I've been told. And that's all I have for right now.
Who is Mr. Sherwood, please?
He works for GHD Engineering, and we had met with him three or four months ago, Eric and I, and I think I reported on it at that time.
Good. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Bill?
Where do we stand with the storage yard? In the triangle lot?
We've gotten our input from it. I've got it after tonight, so I'm bundling a few things together from past recommendations from the HAB, and I'm going to get those into the council hopper over the next couple of months and get them in front of the council.
Anything else? This one? Okay. Thank you. C2, update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none. Neil?
We have not met since the last meeting, and I don't have anything to update other than after speaking with Eric, there's a few items. The final item on here, C8, is one of the topics that the ad hoc committee has been tasked with being involved with. So unless Eric wants to add anything now, we can wait till C8 to discuss that item.
Okay. Any questions for Neil? Seeing none, move on. C3. Update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee. Any public comment? Seeing none. Lynn?
Yes. Eelgrass Committee, we received the Humboldt County Humboldt Bay eelgrass management plan, and we met yesterday to talk about this plan and see if there were any elements in it that if there are any elements in it that can be pertinent or could be helpful to Morro Bay and have development of an eelgrass policy for Morro Bay. We really didn't find a whole lot that was terribly useful, but there were some things. I'm sorry, I should first say, the meeting, the members who met were Kathy Novak, Priya Verna, who is new to our group and is a professor of natural resources management at Cal Poly, Lexi Bell of the NEP, Jean Dowdy, and myself. So we talked about this plan, and we did find that they have a checklist that goes out first to anybody who is going to start a project, and it's an easy sort of quick way, 12 questions on it, that distinguish between those who will have to get permitting and those who probably would not, that there would be no eelgrass impact from their project. A second thing that we saw in this plan is wondering about how they would do their mitigation. The report was unclear on that. I, this morning, talked with Ms. Vanessa Blodgett of the Humboldt Department, and they will be doing a large planting, and how exactly that will become mitigation for anything other than dredging is at this point undetermined. The plan was only adopted a week ago in Humboldt, so they really don't have any results to report. But the third thing that we spoke of in our meeting was how well the management plan is working, and of course there are no results there because it's only been started a week ago. There was a firm that actually developed this plan. It was the Plan West Partners, for whom Vanessa Blodgett works, and she was very helpful with as much information as she could give us, but because of the shortness, there wasn't a whole lot there. Nevertheless, some of these items might be things that Anchor QEA, if we have something done by them, they could address some of these questions. The Humboldt Bay will be working on a regional general permit and then doing a large transplantation of eelgrass, and then that would be mitigation for their dredging. Hopefully there will be excess in that, in the productivity of this transplant, that some of it could then be used to either be a bank or in lieu in some form be mitigation for other projects along the bay. So, any questions? Eric might have an update for us also on what's going on with Anchor QEA on the proposal.
I'm just working with them on incorporating the changes we want to change to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Quick question. In talking with the people about the Humboldt plan, for project, you mentioned that for projects with no impact, the process is similar to our harbor, or is not?
No, we do not have a checklist of this nature, and frankly, I'm not sure how they do it, because the first thing, when you want to do a project, you have to do a pre-permitting survey to find out if there's any eelgrass there. If there is eelgrass that may be impacted, then you have to do a complete survey. So this would eliminate the need for the pre-project survey. That would take the place of the pre-project survey. That's the way I understand it. The permitting process is ponderous, I guess. You do the pre-project survey for eelgrass and figure out how much is there. And then when you actually get your project going, you'd have to do a pre-construction survey. And based on the pre-construction survey, they determine how much mitigation will have to be done. And then you do a post-construction survey to see how much real impact there was, and then you really know how much mitigation you have to do.
So. And that post-construction survey goes on for 5 years. And at some point down the line, there's no defining base that you can use as a pre-construction survey or a post-construction survey that you can base your mitigation on. It goes on and on and on and on. So it's almost impossible to establish a base on this at this point. Currently, you cannot mitigate any structure on the waterfront that's going to impact the eelgrass because there's no mitigation policy in effect at this time.
So what you're saying is that if there is a determination that you will harm eelgrass or it's going to impact it, you can't do anything. Is that correct?
At this point right now, there is no mitigation policy that allow you to do anything.
Sure. Just have a second. So I know virtually nothing about this, so ignorance is not bliss in this case. There is, if this is a question, not a statement, Lynn. There is a California eelgrass state mitigation policy, correct?
Yes.
CEMP. Yes. And isn't it the case that, as referred to in the Humboldt plan, that the quote success criteria for eelgrass mitigation remains the, according to Kemp, remains the establishment of eelgrass at a 1.2-to-1 ratio relative to area of eelgrass impacted?
Yes.
And Gene, how does that?
But they will not allow you to implement that mitigation at this point, because every time they've tried to implement the eelgrass in Morro Bay, the eelgrass has died. So at this point, they said, no, you can't mitigate, no net loss at all. And so then, at this point, you cannot continue to do any mitigation.
At any ratio?
At any ratio. It's off the table at this point. That's why we're trying to establish our own policy to figure out some way to move forward.
So all projects are on hold at this time that are...
If they impact eelgrass, yes.
Anything else for Lynn?
Good job.
I have a couple of questions. So did I understand, Lynn, the committee, did I understand you to say that the committee found some relevant information in the Humboldt Bay study, but nothing that was directly, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but nothing that was directly applicable to a potential Morro Bay mitigation plan, eelgrass mitigation plan. And what drives me to ask that question, even though I thought that might have been what you said, but correct me, is that Humboldt Bay is 16,000 acres and Morro Bay is 2,000 acres. And some, I forget the number, but some significant percentage of the Humboldt Bay acreage is in eelgrass.
Yes, and that is one of the major differences, because their eelgrass is growing, so they don't really have the same problem that we have. We have a problem because our eelgrass is not growing where we want eelgrass to grow. It's only growing where we don't really want it, i.e. where there is development. So if you want to develop something and you're going to impact the eelgrass, you cannot mitigate by planting it in the back bay where there is space and no development, because it's not growing there anymore. And then we get into this thing that Gene is talking about, where it's not growing, therefore there is no mitigation, therefore there are no projects. You cannot even do the things that the city wants you to do, which is make improvements along the waterfront, because you can't harm those three turians of eelgrass.
That was succinct. Thank you.
Lynn, do you want to talk about anchor proposal?
Well, that was the one question.
Okay.
Well, let's get to that in just a second, because I think that's the sort of the wrap-up for this. One of the things that I noticed in the Humboldt Bay report that I thought was really interesting is on page 21 of that report is there is a chart of stresses on eelgrass. I thought that was a pretty interesting document. Somebody spent a lot of time thinking about that. Does the committee have an opinion as to whether a Morro Bay eelgrass management plan needs to address the wasting disease that was talked about at some length in the Humboldt Bay report?
Not directly, although Lexi is on it, and she is very much in touch with the research projects that are coming out of Cal Poly. Most of those projects have not yet provided any conclusions, and if and when they do, then I'm sure Lexi would bring it to the committee when we would have then the meet to talk about and to decide if we could do something with that information, if there was something there that would make a policy that would affect a policy in a positive way. So we have not talked about wasting disease. It's one of the factors, but they are not even convinced that that is, you know, the main factor in the non-growth of eelgrass in our bay. So.
One of the documents that we that surfaced, and I don't remember how it came to the Harbor Advisory Board some time ago relative to eelgrass, was a Newport Bay's eelgrass management plan. And does the committee have an opinion? Has the committee had an opportunity to review that plan to see whether there's elements of that that they think would be applicable to Morro Bay?
No, I don't think we've really talked about the Newport. That one came.
There
up
was some.
There was something.
Mostly, they're dealing with dredging as opposed to
Individual projects.
Right.
The one thing with Humboldt that is the same is that Humboldt is dealing both with dredging and with deterioration of the structures along the waterfront, which in their rebuilding will impact eelgrass. But it's all right since they will have a resource of mitigation.
Neil.
Ron, was your question about the wasting disease just in reference to the stressors, just to identify like an idea that Morro Bay might need to identify stresses as well to possibly manage against?
It had more to do with whether a Morro Bay eelgrass management plan would have to address the reality of this wasting disease. It was mentioned at some length in the Humboldt report, but I didn't see that it drove their plan. But it also, their Humboldt report also says that Morro Bay is the one site on the California coast that was most, where the eelgrass was most impacted by, quote, wasting disease, end quote. That's what led me to ask the question. Okay, before we get a description about the proposal, anything else? Okay, so the proposal.
Well, the proposal is the same one that let's see, we talked about 2 months ago after Eric was getting a proposal from Anchor QEA on how to proceed in formulating an eelgrass policy for the city.
Yeah, we had that and brought to the HAB, got some input, and we met.
Right.
Subsequently, and
and at that time, Eric and I had spoken, and we made the recommendation that they try to focus their study or their recommendations on things that will move forward, not necessarily give us the whole history of eelgrass in Morro Bay. We already know, number one, that the stressors are there. We know that it's not growing. We know that it has gone from 370-odd acres down to 12 or 13 acres currently. So they don't. We didn't really need more information on that, but we want more information on potential forms of mitigation. Since transplanting hasn't worked very well, are there other things that could be done that to mitigate? And what were some of the other? What was the other major
And process.
The process.
To move forward. Like I say, not just identify what work has been done and what documentation is out there.
Yeah.
We know that. Help us with a process, identifying and implementing a process to move forward with.
Yeah.
And what, please, is the timing of that proposal process? The proposal process as opposed to the other process.
I'm working with Anchor right now to get those refinements into their re-proposal, I guess, resubmittal of their proposal. And
yeah.
Once I'm happy with it, I'll execute it and get it going.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Brings us to C4, update from the Marine Sanctuary Ad Hoc Committee. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, that committee has nothing to report as of this date. C5, update from the Working Waterfront Ad Hoc Committee. Any public comment? Seeing none. Gene?
Yes, at our last joint meeting, and that was on September 8th of this year, we were going to have another additional meeting sometime in late October or November. That meeting has not been scheduled yet. I did get an email from Dana on our committee, and he has gotten a letter back from the NWWA. I believe that's National Working Waterfront Association. And he'll give us a quick little rundown on that.
Thank you, Gene. Yeah, that's the National Working Waterfront Network, and they put out bulletins for just different notices. And this has to do with a bill, H.R. 1176, called Keep America's Waterfronts Working Act. And this was actually heard today. I was able to, because I'm not working right now, watch that, and basically this is I'll just read what it is. It's a bipartisan bill that was put together back in February, and today was hearing for it.
In what body, please?
This went in front of the Natural Resources Subcommittee on Water, Power, and Oceans. And the bill would create a grant program to help states protect access and infrastructure for water-dependent businesses. The objective of this bill is twofold. The bill would establish a working waterfront grant program to provide matching competitive grants to coastal states. These grants would help to preserve and expand access to coastal waters for commercial fishing, recreational guiding, aquaculture, boat building, and other water-dependent businesses. The bill would also create a working waterfront task force at the Department of the Interior. The task force would identify and prioritize critical working waterfront needs with respect to their cultural and economic importance, climate change, and other environmental threats, and market conditions for water-dependent businesses. It will also identify working waterfronts within communities. So one of the things right off the bat that was a concern that watched the back and forth a little bit in the hearing, there was quite a bit of support, but there were some issues. And one of the main things was to change it from the Department of Interior to the Department of Commerce as far as an overseer, and that NOAA would actually be the one to work the grant program, which was good because we've looked at NOAA grants before and they were more for research related projects, and this one you could actually would take care of some infrastructure projects. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm sure I'll get an update, and I'll let you know.
Dana, can I ask you about, or if you know, if anything was anything you've read or saw when you watched that, about the grant program? You said grant program for states?
Yes, it's federal help for states individually.
So I wonder how that would be implemented through boating and waterways or something, how that would be a trickle down.
It says it's that NOAA would be working.
I mean, how could we, you know, if a boatyard grant was something we could maybe go after, is that through the state? I wonder how that might be implemented.
It did sound like there are a number of things that need to be worked out. Yeah. From what I could gather, there is a lot of the people there were from the East Coast, and they have a lot more programs than we do out here. There was much more voice than you, except for Washington State, which does very well, has a huge amount of port districts and everything else. The West Coast just wasn't represented very well. But I think they have a lot of things to work out. And one of the big things was they were worried about different agencies stepping on top of others, you know, just not working well together. And I was thinking, gosh, wish we had that problem. We don't even seem to have the resources from what I can find.
Do you think it's something worth putting some more committee time and effort into to develop some comments or recommendations for our representative? It's a House bill, right? HR, yeah. So it's a House bill for Congressman Carbajal? Okay.
Absolutely.
Anything else on C5? See none. It brings us to C6, which is the Harbor Advisory Board Work Program for City Council Goals and Objectives. Goal 1, Objective D, Work Program Element 4, which that applies to the Harbor Advisory Board's work program, regarding licensing/permitting for certain harbor/tidelands marine dependent slash supporting business activities. That's a title. And two of the board members need to recuse themselves, and I'm going to turn this item over to Lynn, who's going to chair it.
Is there any public comment on this item?
So what?
Public.
Let me. Huh? Yeah, Neil can stay. So let me run through my staff report.
Oh, sorry.
Then we'll go public comment. That's all right.
Staff report.
And then these two gentlemen can provide any comment if they wish, and then recuse themselves out of staying. They can stay in the building, as you know. You just have to be out of eye shot and I guess earshot. So this item is a redo from our last meeting. It was a council goal objective on our council-approved goals. I'll kind of cut straight to the chase while we're re-looking at it. After the HAB chairman, Ron, and I looked at this, and we're doing our November planning. We looked at what we did with this item, and we really never closed the loop on it. We didn't finish it. This was a council goal objective to research and bring to council for a recommendation elements of the possibility of doing this licensing or permitting program. When we looked at this at the HAB last month, the HAB basically said, Harbor Advisory Board basically said, let's not look at it. We don't want to do this. Well, you put it on the goals and objectives. If we didn't want to look at it, we should have not put on the goals and objectives. So we need to fulfill our obligation here and finish this item up. We did have some HAB input and recommendation on October 5th on a similar item for events and whatnot and businesses that were taking place through our public area use permit, and Beach Butlers is the company I use as an example, doing weddings and other events on our beaches, and Got some HAB recommendation on that, but when it came to this licensing or permitting activities, we didn't get the information we're looking for, so we're doing a redo and asking you again to ask basically the same questions and try and get some information out of it, and then we'll bring that forward to City Council. I think as either Dana or Ron asked about some items, when our bill asked when an item's going to go forward. I'm bundling a few together, and this will be one of them that will go forward to City Council. So the HAB concerns that were expressed last October about this item was that such a process could be onerous or cumbersome. There are concerns about exclusivity, meaning certain people could maybe get licenses or permits for something and others couldn't. Concerns about it's not worth the time or revenue that would be received. And I'll make a statement that I'm really not looking at this as a revenue-generating item. It's more to make sure that we're providing services, that services being provided on the bay are being done safe and orderly in a professional manner. And then the other concern was the city's current business license process should be sufficient. So again, as a reminder, anybody out there in TV land that may be watching or in the audience, this is to consider some sort of licensing permit oversight of businesses operating on our bay that currently don't have any sort of oversight other than perhaps a business license, and maybe not even that. People working on boats, marine surveyors, bottom cleaners and the such that aren't working out of a brick and mortar site necessarily, that are just sort of freelancing out there on the bay. You know, it's our mission, the Harbor Department's mission and the city's mission, really to promote business throughout the Harbor and Tidelands Trust, again, in a safe, orderly, and professional manner, and to encourage the offering of essential marine-related services, which these are the sort of items that were under consideration here, and increase those opportunities as well and promote them if we can. But we want to ensure that such a program and sort of a vision of this program, what it really would, we believe, result in is ensure that the businesses that are conducting themselves on Tidelands Trust have an appropriate business license or any other required licensing or certification for their line of work. There's not just a business license that may be required, but you know, folks that may be operating six-pack or other sort of things, there may be some other sort of professional licensing that they should have that they may not have, and there's, without any oversight, we're never going to know. We also want to ensure that those conducting business are properly insured, bonded, or covered in terms of liability, including potentially naming the city as additionally insured. We want to provide a means for the city, by enforcement if necessary, to ensure that folks are following best management practices and, again, being certificated and insured, that we've got a mechanism to do that. And provide surety and peace of mind to those that are getting those services, that the ones that we're allowing to be providing them on the bay are doing so legally and with proper authorization and doing it in the best way possible. So really, it's not about making money. I don't see you know, the folks that are out there doing business on the waterfront, on the water, providing these marine dependent services. There's not a lot of margin there to begin with anyhow, so I don't see making a percent growth type operation out of them. It's just ensuring that there's just got some basic things in place that we can license or permit them in an orderly fashion. And again, we're not asking per se whether such a program should be implemented or not. That's not our objective here. Our objective is to get some input to bring to the council and let the council make the decision whether or not we're going to put that in place. So I'll go, I guess, Lynn, if you want to go through, you know, I brought back sort of the same questions I did last time. There were some of them that weren't applicable because we did it sort of a dual fashion. If you recall last time, we did the beach operation, you know, business type things first, and then we circled back to this item. So I came up with the same, basically reiterated the same questions. Some of them that didn't apply took off, obviously, so it wouldn't be confusing. So Lynn, if maybe you want to go through those, take public comment, and then we can go through these items 1 through 7 and get our input and go from there, if that sounds like a reasonable approach.
Okay. So now is the time for public comment on this item. Now is the time for any public comment on this item.
Good evening, Ron Reisner, Morro Bay.
relative to agenda item C6 this evening. I've read the agenda item staff report. I understand the stated goals of the Harbor Department staff as they relate to essential marine-related services that are delivered on Harbor Tidelands properties, as well as to providing opportunities on the bay for small businesses that have no fixed place of business or a lease on the waterfront. As a provider of marine-related services on Tidelands Trust lands, it's entirely appropriate that I must be a formally constituted business under the laws of the state and have a valid Morro Bay business license. Every person or group that charges money for business activities on Tidelands Trust lands should be a duly constituted legitimate business and hold a valid City of Morro Bay business license. I do not, however, see the need for a, quote, special, end quote, permit to perform business activities on Tidelands Trust lands. I do understand that oversight of Tidelands Trust lands falls to the Morro Bay Harbor Department, and therefore it may be useful for the Harbor Department to be knowledgeable of all marine-dependent and marine-supporting services operating on Tidelands Trust lands. Perhaps a simple means to accomplish this is to add a special designation to the annual Morro Bay business license for those businesses that operate on Tidelands Trust lands. The city would make the Harbor Department aware of all such designated licensees. Personally, I would have no problem with paying a modest additional fee of my business tax, for instance, or a business license, for instance, $50 a year, to engage in business activities on Tidelands Trust lands, especially given the provisions of the Tidelands grant document itself, which, among other uses, requires that Tidelands Trust lands be used for commerce. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Harbor Advisory Board members. I understand the need for this for the Harbor Department to get a handle on this. The city requires a business license. It does not require a liability insurance, nor identify the city. If you have a business license and someone asks you to work on their car, wash their car, work on their engine, there is no city requirement for general liability. That issue is between the car owner and the worker. I see no difference here on the water. I'm concerned about the small business working force, men and women, who benefit our bay. For myself, I will have to pass on the additional insurance expense, somewhere between 20% and 22% per year. I know how much more it costs, I know how much I charge, and this will raise the cost between 28% and 30%. I took the opportunity to ask my local insurance carrier about insurance for these bay workers. His response was, "Thanks, Gene. It's tough to say on some of these other types of businesses. For example, someone cleaning the bottom of a boat. I don't think we insure anybody doing that. But knowing the market, though, I would estimate the minimum premium work for that to be around $10,000 per year. That's pretty hard for someone to justify in a small business. There needs to be an alternative solution. Thank you."
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, public comment is closed. So, Mr. LeFay, we will now go to the questions, numbers 1 through 7. And deal with each of them. Would you like to weigh in on question number 1? Should licenses or permits be issued on an as-needed continual basis or periodically via an RFP review process?
I think it should be annually. It should be through a business license.
I think that it should be just a business license, and it should be done for the year. and that's how I think it should be handled.
Just a business license, you mean, not an additional license?
No. I mean, if you're going to be working on, I think Mr. Reisner in the audience made a valid point. As you're applying for the business license, maybe there's a little box that you're going to be working in title and trust areas so that the harbor is at least aware of those businesses. I mean, this could be the start of, you know, boat owners out there and other people on the bay that is requesting an electrician, requesting a surveyor, or requesting someone. They'd have a list. I don't know if they have a list right now. So it's just maybe a way of designating who is out there doing it. But it should be done through the business license of the City of Morro Bay.
Thank you. Dana.
Yeah, kind of along that, first of all, down below, staff recommends a three-year term. I think that's fine. I would actually like to see the Harbor Department oversee this process. Yeah. What do you mean?
For that item, I think it's ongoing, not three-year. We're on number one.
Yeah, I know. Oh. But I'm saying down here on third one. Anyways, back to what I was talking about. As far as a business license, this is what I brought up last time. I think it should just be a business license like anybody else that does business in Morro Bay. I see the problem with doing that, with the harbor not being able to keep track of what's going on in the harbor, being different than on land. However, business-wise, I think the license could be just the same. I don't really want to see an added one. So I would think that possible a marine business license that is over that the Harbor Department oversees, similar to the city business license, so it wouldn't be an additional business license, it would be just one that the Harbor Department oversees.
Instead of the one that the
city hall would oversee. That way they don't have to get two licenses, they would get one. There would be a few different items on it. And I agree with the public comment where Gene was talking about liability issues. I don't think we want to get into that. I know up here that staff says something about city's liability. I've never seen the city have too much liability on anything as a general contractor and seeing the way things get done. And so just looking at these first five questions, I'm happy to go along with staff's recommendations for the most part, but I think it could all be handled under one marine business license.
Bill?
Just curiosity, though. I mean, if a particular tradesman just gets a marine business license, I mean, and he wants to work at a business downtown Morro Bay, I see some confusion. I mean, they, you know, again, if they just got a marine orientated license. I mean, that.
You have multiple businesses.
Okay.
Well, we'll go in line. You'll get to yours. Okay, Neil, question number one is the one we're talking about. Should licenses or permits be issued on an as needed or continual or periodically via request for proposal?
Yeah, I agree with the conversation's sake as this is moving along, whether it be, you know, going along with the current recommendation that's on here, some designation that would, you know, if you don't have an address and you have a marine license, a business license, that maybe the address is the Harbor Department, and you guys then have the contact information as they've filed it through you, and the Harbor Department could manage that. But paying two separate business licenses doesn't make sense to me either. I don't know if that's if you guys don't feel like that's answering this question, or I don't know, staff. Yeah, so that's what I would propose.
Okay, Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, I'm sorry to cut you off. I know you one last thing regarding the insurance. Could that simply be cured through a waiver? If I'm going to be a business that's operating on the water and I come to the city and I go through my paperwork and I file my business license, and instead of listing the city as co-insured, as I've had to list people as co-insured before, and that costs money every time you have to do that. Could it simply be a simple boilerplate form that the city holds that's a waiver of liability that that person who operates the business would be releasing the city and taking on that risk?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, anything's possible. I'm not...
Well, yeah, I'm just throwing that into the pot ideas to so make it feasible
and
not take on a cost as the business.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to throw into the mix. As far as your other point about answering the question or not, I mean, yeah, this is the information I'm looking for. What I wasn't looking for last time is, no, don't do it. That's not what we're tasked to do. We're tasked to get input on it. And so, yeah, let's keep it part of the normal business license process. That's the kind of input I'm looking for.
Jeremiah, your turn.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Lynn. The businesses named that are operating like that on the waterfront seem to me to be smaller businesses, boat cleaners, even as far as surveyors, because they're transient and don't always work in the water. Sometimes they work in boatyards, wherever. So anyways, I think that just our regular business license, perhaps a separate designation, but just for an example, first thing that came to my mind was somebody cleaning a boat. So I hire some person to come down and clean the boat. There's a good chance they clean things in town also. So it's not just on the water. So to make a small business that's not generating a whole lot of income for themselves to begin with, get two business licenses to operate in town, it'd be ridiculous. It's just more red tape. One business license, they should be interchangeable. If you've got a business license for the waterfront for $85, you shouldn't need one to go up in town and do a job. That business license should suffice. And if you've got a business license from up in town and you want to come down the waterfront, that again should suffice. So if they need a designation, I would be in favor of designation, but not any increases in costs or red tape or anything that would keep these people from doing their jobs. And one of the things that was brought up was a six-pack boat operation. Well, they should have a business license, whether it's marine or not, but the Coast Guard takes care of all their other licenses and permits and insurances and that, the so forth and so on, that are required through the federal government. So we shouldn't have to change. There's enough. There's already enough.
Thank you, Jeremiah. I don't know if I can really add anything to what's already been said. I would agree a request for proposal would probably not really work, considering many of the kinds of businesses that we're talking about here, the guys who clean the bottom, an occasional electrician, somebody who comes down to do some plumbing work on your boat or painting or varnishing, that kind of thing. I can't see them filling out a request for proposal in a review process. So I would say the usual business license and perhaps a special designation, or at least to assure that they have appropriate certifications, if there are any. Maybe that would be a sheet of paper that they would fill out and turn into the Harbor Department, and the Harbor Department could review it for whatever certifications might be needed. Okay. Neil.
So in addition to that, I mean, if you're just filing a normal business license, there could just be a box on the application that says, will you do business in the harbor or on lands of the Tideland Trust lands. And if that box is checked, then maybe the city just forwards their information to you so that you guys have a list now of people who are involved. It's just a box.
Okay. considering that we're all pretty much in agreement there, I'm not sure how much more information we're going to get from questions 2 through 7. But let's see. Should limits be placed on the number and types of businesses that are licensed or permitted? Bill?
No.
Dana?
No.
Neil?
No.
Jeremiah?
No.
Lynn?
No.
That was easy.
3, for what term should the licenses or permits for marine dependent services be issued? Staff is recommending a 3-year term, and I read that as saying they're going to issue their own kind of permit, either in addition to or instead of the regular business. So, Bill?
Again, I go back to a city license is the only thing that needs to be done, and it's on a yearly basis.
Okay. Dana?
I'm going to say whatever they work out. I mean, that kind of goes along with whether the Harbor Department oversees this license special for marine business or if the city does. And if the city does, they have a 1-year. So I'm going to leave that undone.
Yeah.
I thought I agreed with Bill, and then I started to listen to Dana, and that makes sense as well. I think that if it is just going to be a one business license, that it should be annual. For example, mine, I have to pay annually, and it's based on a function of how many employees I have as well. And so those change annually. And if you pay on 3 years and then you have a bad year and you lay people off, you're going to still pay that high rate, even if you've made an adjustment. So it cuts both ways, of course. Moves with your business.
Okay. Jeremiah?
Yeah, Neil made a good point because businesses change, employees change, and I agree with what Bill said. We've already got something in place. I don't see any reason for altering what's already there. It's just, they're doing fine.
Okay. And my answer is that if we're going to continue using a standard business license and only having some kind of a report sent to the Harbor Department, if the Harbor Department feels like they need some additional information, it can be garnered in that way. So it would be whatever the standard business license issuance permit period is. 4, what fees to be charged?
Same fees that are currently being charged via the city business license. And, you know, I don't think there should be any extra or any less.
Very good. Dana?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Neil?
If it's done through the business form and not a separate form, then I would agree that there shouldn't be any change in the fee schedule. If the Harbor Department is going to take over the management of this form and there's going to be some kind of change in the cost to manage this, then I think at that time that issue would need to get brought back to us before I would comment on that, I guess.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, again, I agree with Bill. It should be one license, one fee for everybody involved, whether it's water, marine-based, or land-based. It should be the same for everybody.
Okay. And I agree with Jeremiah. 5, how should licenses or permits be approved, administratively or by city council? Bill.
Well, I mean, I think this, you know, I think administratively, I mean, to have to go, if you're a boat cleaner, to go through city council, I think is pretty, I think it's ludicrous. So I think it should be just if you're going to clean boats or you're going to clean windows, you're going to clean houses, you get a city permit. Simple as that.
Yeah, administratively should be fine.
Neil?
Administratively, I think to move at the speed of business, you can't do it through the city council. No offense.
Jeremiah?
Same.
Ben? Same. Six, of the HAB concerns from October 5th, are there recommendations or ideas that would mitigate the concerns or issues?
I think that the one thing that, and I don't know if this is an appropriate forum, but the insurance has been brought up, and I think there's two schools of thought on this. Insurance is a part of doing business, but it's also very onerous. I mean, I'm a business owner. I have about 50 employees. I pay workman's comp. I pay general liability. I mean, it's ludicrous. But if you're a single individual, I mean, just like Gene stated, trying to get general liability insurance, cleaning boats or whatever, could be a very, very difficult task to swallow. And so I think we need to explore, or at least try to explore, to see if the city of Morro Bay can give a waiver to some of the people that are doing businesses in the bay. I don't know if that's possible, but I know fishermen have to have their own license, so I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on the whole thing. I mean, I think it's the litigation concept. When Gene states that it's like whether or not he takes his car into someone, well, that's a little different, because what's happening is that we are doing work on state lands, and the city could become liable, and the state could become liable if something did happen. So we have to be very careful on that. So I think it does need to be discussed, and we need to come to some conclusion. Maybe not tonight, but that's just my thoughts on anything else on this.
Yeah, concerns from October 5th and tonight. I would say obvious costs, because we're looking at very small businesses. They don't have a building. They're just working out of a skiff, basically, or whatever. And to keep those fees down as low as possible, whatever type of business license they're going to have. I don't really want to see insurance come into it, but if that's what has to happen, I'll leave that to the administrators of the harbor department. I agree with the public comment regarding the insurance. I can just imagine anything on the water is just going to be skyrocketed. So I'm not sure how to work that one out.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a question, I think, for Eric. The city, we had this meeting, I don't know, a year or so ago, in which we talked about insurance in the harbor, and what, as a topic, we decided not to pursue that, right? So I know that the city does have an interest, obviously, like any entity, in protecting itself. And so do you have any insight into, insurance-wise, what the city's maybe looking to gain, or what would be something that would be amicable for small businesses that, to put, as Gene brought up, $10,000 for a policy for a diver, if that's the cost of doing business, there's going to be some pretty dirty boats out there, and nobody's going to be able to dive. So, unless we have a boatyard, and that could be mitigated if there's a boatyard. But we keep picking on this one type of business, but there's a bunch of other businesses that want to exist and that would fall under this category that we're not talking about. And so, but the point is, to protect the city, and that's what we're here to talk about, is how do we figure out that the city gets its protection and that businesses can operate. So do you have any more insight maybe into what the needs, or if anybody else here wants to talk about what the needs of the city might be?
Well, insurance, obviously, it's covering the liability and if something goes wrong. It's obviously there's a risk reward factor there. Is it worth What is the risk? I mean, that's the insurance's basic question every time. What is the risk you're covering? And if you think it through, I've not engaged the city attorney in on this to see where he may be on it. My estimation that is the risk for the city is pretty darn low.
Okay.
From a liability standpoint.
That's what I want to
pick on the bottom cleaner, just because that seems to be the
right
du jour for tonight. But, our risk is fairly low for that, in that they're operating in public waters. They're not, unlike a lease site where it is a defined leased premises that has an operating business, where most of these other businesses we're talking about are sort of ambulatory or sort of, like I say, out there freelancing in the general public. You can't necessarily insure general public property, unlike a lease site where you've got a defined property that you're insuring. So mm-hmm. There's definite issues at play that I don't have all the answers to, certainly, but
okay.
We're cognizant of, and obviously the idea here is to not, my idea is to not, you know, sort of regulate something out of existence for the sake of regulating it out of existence, to put insurance or fee or whatever on it. It's just to ensure that the folks out there, and I'm not going to use any specific examples, but there's been some examples out there on the water that really shouldn't have been doing business, shouldn't be doing business on our bay, and we put some level of oversight or permitting on them, and maybe the city standard business license process would work with a few little tweaks. I don't know the business license code, you know, in and out to know exactly how it works, but maybe there's some tweaks that can be done to that. I just feel we do have an obligation to have some degree of oversight over this to make sure that folks out there getting services are getting them from legit businesses, and we're not just letting it be freeform out there and letting anybody do anything they want, because there's been some bad things that have happened out there.
Yeah. So a letter of indemnification, if the city's attorney found that was strong enough, now the city's protected.
It might
now,
be for the risk that's involved, it possibly could be.
Possibly, and if a business is doing something wrong, then we have laws and procedures that becomes regulation, policing.
Yeah.
Right. That's totally separate issues. Both important, obviously, but you know, if somebody's doing business in a dangerous manner, either to personal safety or to health, then that's a totally different issue.
Yeah, I mean, there may be other ways to mitigate the liability issues other than insurance. Absolutely, it's not the do-all be-all.
Okay, that's it for me.
Jeremiah, comments, please.
Yeah. Well. Insurance is, you know, I've got, I think, just my business, I think I have 5 insurance companies that we deal with for different levels of insurance. But in any case, some businesses have insurance naturally, and I don't like, I'm going to take Gene, who's admitted that he has insurance. Well, he has a construction operation and certainly needs insurance. Somebody who is, again, cleaning boats or with a smaller operation, you know, which would be like perhaps a mom and pop or a single person operation or what have you, well, there's no way they're going to get insurance and keep that operation going. So if they had a business license and we threw the insurance on them, then they would have lost the money for the business license because they couldn't get the insurance. The person hiring someone to do that would just find someone else to hire, probably with no business license or no, you know. So some businesses, we all know what it takes to run our business, we all should have appropriate insurance. But there are certain businesses that, if I was in the business of cleaning boats or diving on somebody's boat or something, I wouldn't have insurance because I wouldn't feel I'd personally need it. I mean, so there's apples and oranges in the insurance question. I think people will hire outside of the normal avenues of hiring people if there's nobody available who can afford the high cost of insurance. So I don't know. The insurance issue is just
You're saying no.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the concerns or the ideas and recommendations, insurance is only one of them, and we tend to get sort of bogged down on the insurance question. When at this point, what I heard from Eric was that
he said there have been people operating on the bay who should not have been there without identifying the exact reason. But it seems that this business license or a marine business license is not the way that we want to go, and that instead of that, talking about that, we need to talk about the things or some other way that we can satisfy and assure that the clients of people who are doing the hiring are getting, are being protected as much as they need to be. So it's not the business license that we really want to talk about, but figure out some other way to see that people have some basic skills, some basic certification, some kind of investigation, assertion that they are not going to cause harm to the bay or to their client. Outside of insurance, forget about insurance.
I'm just curious, Lynn, and probably a question for Eric. I don't know what he was referring, what you were referring to, Eric, as far as the people who perhaps should not have been operating, but isn't there other rules and regulations that govern all the businesses and ways we do business? Isn't there something existing that could be used to correct the deficiencies in their businesses? I mean, there's so many rules and regulations, there must be one somebody could dig up.
Dana's itching to say something.
I was just thinking about this, how we're kind of getting off track from the real question. It does have to do with our overseeing of this license permits and for marine-related businesses. And I thought, well, what's the difference between one of the big differences that the Harbor Department and entities like the Yacht Club and others are having to deal with, and that's the Clean Marina Act. So if there is criteria in there that is used in the license.
There is not.
Well, then could be created as far as, especially for the environment. And then if you're asking for, if there are licenses other than, like if there are certifications, like you're a certified mechanic for outboards or diesels or whatever, and that's listed on your application. But I don't know how far you can go with this, really.
Well, it's an interesting point you bring up, and I'll use the Santa Barbara example. They have a business licensing outside of the normal business license that we're talking about. They have a business activity permit where and their boat bottom cleaners have to, in order to be allowed to operate in Santa Barbara Harbor, they've got to get through the California, there's a California Diver Association that has a boat bottom cleaning BMP, kind of like a Clean Marina thing, a self industry led effort, and you've got to go to the California Diver Association training and get that kind of training before you're allowed in. The thing that Santa Barbara and most other harbors have is they have controlled access to their waterfront. You can't get down onto the slips in Santa Barbara, generally speaking, without a key card because everything's gated. We're wide open. So that's a big difference. So if you want to go work on a boat, you've got to either get the key card from the guy whose boat you're working on, and he's going to risk losing a slip because now you're not going by the rules, or you get okayed by the city, and so there's got a level of control over it. What you're talking about is another interesting twist to it, and adding some sort of criteria, like you say, the some BMPs or for a marine surveyor, maybe they've got to make sure they're accredited marine surveyor. As if someone's saying they're an electrician, making sure they're at least a certified electrician and not just saying they're an electrician, things like that, before the business license is issued. Maybe that's a way of doing it. To answer Jeremiah's question, there are things out there already. For the things that I just covered, generally, no. I can't go out there. If someone's going to go work on your boat and he's not a certificated or a licensed electrician of some sort, we, the city, have no way of
currently ensuring that they do. What Dan talks about, maybe, so if we put that as a requirement to get your business license, and you're saying you're a, you know, an electrician, okay, well, show your certificate or whatever an electrician has.
Yeah.
That may be one way of ensuring that kind of thing. And that's maybe a reasonable way of going about it.
Yeah, if you're an electrician, then you should have a license. Mm-hmm. You should have a California license for being an electrician. So that's easy. The one you were talking about for divers, that sounds reasonable. And I'm sure there's other ones for different businesses. Some businesses probably don't need any.
And there probably isn't anything.
And there probably isn't anything. Yeah. Right.
Jeremiah?
You know, there's a few people around town who currently do put the zinc, you know, do zincs. And when they're down there, they'll, you know, clean the bottom and do the zincs. They're very, I know a few of them, I probably don't know all of them, very, very good, capable people, good divers. They're licensed and certified and so forth and so on. You know, I'd hate to have to make those people go get a special license to clean a bottom.
They wouldn't have to.
Well, I mean, that's what Eric was just saying.
If they're certified as a diver, which you said,
right?
Yeah. You know, that's all they need. But
no, that's not what I heard.
No, I don't think you heard me right, Jeremy. I think to touch on, you know, what sort of licensing or certification or qualification somebody in their different lines of work may be. Use the diver example. If you're a bottom, you know, a bottom diver, if it's incorporated into the regular business license permit process, where the permit's not approved until, you know, we establish certain criteria for a bottom cleaning business boat diver guy to be doing business on the bay. Okay, you got to have a business license, standard business license, and you've got to meet, you know, for a guy that's using scuba or hookah or something, you've got to be a Patty or whatever the certified divers are. Some basic, you're an electrician, you got to show that you're a certified electrician. That kind of thing.
Okay. Sorry, Eric. I thought you had said something license. About some special diver school.
No.
I was like, oh boy, you know, okay. Teach you how to use a broom. You know.
Okay.
So I think with that, have we covered?
Yes.
Number 7 as well.
Beating that one to death, yeah. So.
Okay, let's move on.
So
is that good enough, Eric?
No, that's, yes. That's,
thank you.
Thank you. That's what I was hoping for last month.
Okay. How do we call them back?
You just run the meeting, Lynn. Let's get going.
Yeah, those two guys can come back if they want. Maybe they don't.
Finish that agenda. On to the next item.
Okay, we'll go on to the next item. No, we can't do that.
Where is Gene and Ron?
Are they listening?
They're here.
Or are they not listening?
Oh, that's so good.
All right.
Better than real life.
Okay, agenda item C7. Harbor Advisory Board Work Program for City Council Goals and Objectives, Goal 1. Objective D, work program element 10 regarding leaseholder incentives for diversifying the caliber or type of products or services they sell. Staff report.
So another goal work item. I think this one, Neil, this is one of your two pet work items here that you came up with as part of the goal setting process. Research and bring to council for consideration a waterfront leaseholder incentive to obtain more years on the terminal lease in exchange for diversifying the caliber or type of products or services they sell. Two types are lacking or needed in the area. In discussing this, I think one of my homework items was getting with Jennifer Little and Econi and our tourism folks and seeing where they think we could go with this. And I've talked to a few business people about it, well, a few leaseholders as well. And their general impression is if there's a service or product lacking, that they think they can make money on, they're going to provide it, unless you somehow subsidize it. I don't think term on a lease would qualify as a subsidy. I'm trying to say subsidization. I quit trying to say that word. So the general feeling was let market dynamics rule, and the things that are lacking will be provided by the market, because somebody will figure out that it's needed, short of some barrier that may be out there from city rules or regulations standpoint to prevent people from doing that. Let the market rule. In talking with some of those folks and with Econi, the general feeling was a more sensible approach might be a general one where incentives are put out there for, and it could be in their lease, again, you know, a leaseholder incentive of some sort, whether it's the term of their lease or other terms and conditions. For special event planning, and these are the bullet points in your staff report, and these are just a few ideas, this certainly isn't exhaustive. Special event planning and or execution, and I'll use an example of something that's happening now down at Giovanni DeGaramore site, where the Coffee Pot restaurant is and Giovanni's Fish Market. They've had, and I think there's still a couple more going, a series of music events that they've been putting on down there with some vendors coming in, and the city's been helping promote that, and it's a partnership deal where it's been pretty successful, a lot going down the parking lot. So things like that may be an example of that. Participation in a business improvement district or a BID, which is basically a self-imposed or voted in improvement district where there's a cost of being a member of it. With the hoteliers right now, there's a TBID, the Tourism Business Improvement District, where every hotel I think pays an additional 3% of the total room rate into the TBID, and the TBID takes that money and uses it for overall promotion of the city. And so the idea of a business improvement district on our waterfront where the revenues generated could be used for more general waterfront needs like sidewalk cleaning or restroom maintenance and repair, other improvements, public improvements that benefit everybody out there and the general public instead of everybody dealing with sort of their public stuff individually on their individual lease sites. Public-private partnerships to promote or augment various events or services, kind of like number one, where the city teams up again, like what Gio's doing in his parking lot there periodically. Our participation or helping solve some of the public parking options or trolley services, valet services for pedicabs. As we heard from Ray Fields, maybe there's a way that some of our leaseholders can help and promote a pedicab business and get some sort of incentive on their lease site to do that. So, again, the general consensus was, let's look at this as a more specific thing rather than saying, well, we need, you know, a shop that offers more baby shoes on the waterfront. So let's look for that. That's just a dumb example I came up with, but that's kind of the general gist that I got from the folks that I talked to. So I just wanted to bring this back to the HAB and circle back and throw that out there and see what other sort of input you folks might have on that.
I'm going to ask you a couple of background questions before we open this up to discussion up here. Given that the agenda item specifically focuses on, quote, waterfront leaseholder incentive, end quote, which means the lease sites that currently exist in the Titleist Trust. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the item also says, quote, obtain more years on the term of their leases in exchange for so on and so on and so on, end quote. So my question, one of my questions is, what are, in terms of the current leases on Titleist Trust lease sites, what sort of calendar terms do we have? Are they all over the board? Do we have some that were written for 1 year? Do we have some written for 100 years? Is there any way you can tell us what a typical, if you will, existing lease term is?
50 years is the maximum any lease term can be per State Lands Commission. We have leases varying anywhere right now from 10 to 50 years, and it's predicated primarily on the level of investment, meaning the level of development that leaseholder has put into that lease site, or redevelopment, or new, you know, adding, you know, Doug Redican, for example, got a lease for X number of years. It was something less than 50 at Rose's Landing, didn't have any water improvements. He's now, although for a number of years now, and running into a lot of mostly eelgrass roadblocks, been trying to develop some slips down there, and he's getting more years on his lease for development of those slips. So they're everywhere from, like, say, 10 years to 50, predicated generally
the term predicated mostly on the level of development, which is the level of commitment that the leaseholder makes. There's other terms. I mean, I don't think this item necessarily needs to be exclusive to leasehold lease term. There's other terms of the lease that could be potentially offered up, such as the percentage rent paid or the annual rent paid, or other things that might entice a leaseholder to jump into some of these things we're looking for, maybe to possibly jump into.
Well, I appreciate that point, but that's not the agenda item. So if we're going to look at other incentives besides more, quote, more years on the term of their leases, end quote, then wouldn't we need to agendize that discussion?
Yeah, the item is, you've got a point, that was how the goal objective item was written. I think that was Neil's original suggestion in addition to the other one, another leaseholder incentive. Do we have to re-agendize if there's other things we want to talk about? I mean, broadly speaking, it's a leaseholder incentive to try and entice them to diversify caliber type of product or services that they offer. I said the general research I got was that you're going to have a hard time focusing on trying to incentivize somebody to produce a product or service unless you want to give them a flat out, you know what that product or service is, and you give them a flat out incentive for it, whether that's monetary or years on their lease. But again, the gist of what I got from folks was let the market decide what products or services, look at it in a more broad sense. So in that sense, the things I brought forward, you could say, don't really fit exactly that goal as we've got it written either. But I think more broadly, we're looking for a leaseholder incentive to diversify caliber or type of products or services, or the general business, you know, improve the general business environment. I think we're fine underneath that, to answer your question in a roundabout way. I don't think we need to re-agendize if we think, well, let's offer up something other than more years on their lease. I'm not concerned about operating slightly outside that
well,
strictly
then,
defined
then we're,
box.
Then we're going to defer for this agenda item topic description of we will defer to the subject line, because the subject line reads, quote, regarding leaseholder incentives for diversifying the caliber or type of products and services they sell, end quote. Okay, and my next question, and my last before we turn this over to the board, under the city's current Tidelands Trust lease management policy, what sort of lease terms are possible? If I'm interested in acquiring a lease on a Tidelands lease site, can I negotiate up to within one to 50 years? Can I negotiate anything with the city that I want to in terms of a lease term, calendar term?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we've got our template, quote unquote, lease that has most of the terms and conditions defined, but the variables are the term of the lease, meaning how long it's going to go, how much you pay, and then there's every lease generally has some special provisions peculiar to that lease site that also address monetary and other issues. So, but it's all up for negotiation.
So there's no prescribed terms within the current lease management policy.
Isn't the term based on level of improvement? In other words, like the Galley Restaurant, they spent over $1 million when they remodeled. You probably negotiated a better
term for them, right? Isn't it based on dollar volume?
It is the lease management policy
and I don't have it right in front of me, but I'll paraphrase it. The term of the lease is predicated primarily on the level of development slash investment, how much of leaseholders willing to go in and put into it and what they're willing to do relative to the size of the lease site. So there's while we sort of have a dollar guideline we kind of sort of go by, you can't specifically apply that because of a lease site like Marina Square to rebuild those two blocks is going to be, you know, $5 million prospect, $6-7 million prospects in today's dollars. We're redeveloping a lease site like Kayak Horizons, you're not going to spend $5 million there. Well, if you do, you're going to gold plate it. So it's commensurate with the size of the site and what's appropriate for the development there. So if you're going in and you know, maximizing the use and the facilities and improvements on that site's square footage, then your term is generally commensurate with, you know, maximizing that use, and which obviously has a correlate directly to the amount of money you put into it and your investment into it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And to go back to your original concern, Ron, I'm thinking about a little bit more in terms of our, you know, what's on specifically on the agenda. We can certainly keep it to, you know, more terms on the lease, more years on the lease being sort of the primary predicator on which we're looking for an incentive. I'm perfectly happy doing that. It doesn't necessarily preclude down the line looking at other things in the lease that may incentivize folks, but we can certainly keep it to that from a conceptual standpoint and talk about, you know, what some of the things we might do to entice that incentive.
Well, you know, again, I think this is, you know, we only have 30 leases, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that correct, Lori? So it's an individual situation where, you know, Neil, you are a leaseholder. You negotiated with the city based on what you're going to do there. And you know, let the marketplace decide what's going to happen. Again, for us to say, I want you to sell squid tomorrow or whatever the case may be, I mean, that's your decision. So I'm just not really sure if we're going to really accomplish anything with this, personally.
Yeah. And I understand that. And I think as the last meeting that I was here when we discussed this, another idea that had floated up throughout this conversation was incentivizing businesses through giving them lease terms if they possibly converted businesses towards more, I don't know if I'd say marine-related businesses, but businesses that were more involved with marine-related uses. So I think we started then tying that into the working waterfront and other ideas like that.
Yeah, that's a good point, marine-dependent. And Lori whispered to me here a second ago, we do have such an incentive on the Dutchman lease site. It's not necessarily, it's not a term, it's not adding more term to their lease. They get a break on their annual rent for maintaining a fish buying station there in the back, which is basically the slime eel dock commonly referred to. So before then, you know, Brett Cunningham was operating out of there until he outgrew it and then moved down to where Santa Monica Seafood is now. But there's an incentive in that lease site that says so long as you have a fish buyer, commercial fish operating dock there, do you get a break on your annual rent. So that sort of incentive does exist. In our early iterations of trying to entice our leaseholders to provide public restrooms, I think, and I can't remember which lease site, if I thought about it, I could probably figure it out, but one of our early iterations before we started making a requirement in our leases to, hey, you got to provide these restrooms to the public, which is what we've done most recently in the last four or five iterations of lease site redevelopments. We put a monetary break on their lease for providing public restrooms. So there are a couple of examples out there. But your marine dependent thing is, a more kind of what I was getting at in the staff report was, what's a more broad way of approaching this rather than, you know, squid or baby shoes or whatever thing you want to come up with.
I agree with that. I guess you know, when the idea, the concept of this when I first started was just thinking about, you know, some way to spark a little bit of growth within the economy and using the one asset that one of the assets or incentives that the city had as an incentive, and that was time on the leases. And so that's what this whole idea, I guess, spawned from. So now as it, we go ahead, you know, if it moves towards marine-related, you know, I feel like I can jump on that bandwagon, I guess, as well. But I was thinking really broadly at the beginning, and I guess I didn't have an idea, you know, I didn't have the roadmap laid out, but it was just the conversation starter. And now as we're a little further down the road, I don't know if I'm any closer to a better understanding or some kind of recommendation that I would give to the city. But Measure D already dictates that these areas are limited in their usage. But the other, the rest of the Embarcadero has no other, you know, managing practice other than, you know, what gets approved by the harbor, I guess, to go in. But there's no incentive for them necessarily to be marine-related at this point. So time could be that. That's it.
Lynn?
There might other incentives. I have a hard time figuring out what they might be. I know that the yacht club gets a break on our lease because of our moorings. So, but these are very specific to specific sites and businesses. So it seems to me that you have to look for the incentive that suits each individual one. What you can't really make any blanket rules about it. It depends on what the business is and what might be an incentive to them, which is not the same as what would be an incentive to the next one down the road.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what Lynn said. And, you know, the business will, as far as products and services that they supply, that's their job as a business person. If they're not doing a good job, they'll fail and life will go on. And, but at the like Lynn said, every business is different. Everyone has a different set of parameters. If in issuing a lease to a business and there was something that was not that the harbor department did not agree with, then they would certainly not have to grant the lease. And I don't, you know, I just don't see getting involved in somebody else's business, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Gene.
Yeah, a couple questions, Eric. Now, there used to be allowable uses on the lease sites, and there were restrictions on what a lease site could do and what they couldn't do. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that's always the case. Every address has a conditional use permit or conditional use permits that go along with it, and those conditional use permits generally dictate what can be done. You've got a permit for a retail, you get retail, you got a permit for a restaurant, you got a permit for this, you get a permit for that. The way we try to keep it structured within our leases, and some of the older leases don't necessarily follow this model because it's a more recent development of how we've tried to structure our leases. We try to structure them in such a manner that when a lease site redevelops, and I'll just use maybe Rose's Landing is the example. When Doug Redican rebuilt that and negotiated a new lease, the new lease says the permitted uses on this lease site shall be in accordance with conditional use permit number, blah, 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 whatever that was when he rebuilt that site. At lease inauguration, which when this thing gets rebuilt, when he scrapes it to the ground and rebuilds it, those uses are restaurant, retail, and the things that Doug got permitted during the time of his getting that conditional use permit, and we put it in there as that. If down the line he wants to add something that's not on the list, then he's got to go through the regular approval process, which may mean going through Planning Commission like he's doing now, and He's wanting to add hotel. That wasn't in the original conditional use permit, so now he's going through the Planning Commission process to get that allowed, and if Planning Commission says yes and he gets it approved, even though the lease doesn't have it as in its list, the lease itself doesn't say hotel, it says the conditional use permit as may be amended, and the conditional use permit gets amended, so then it gets allowed. That's how we tried to do it. There are some leases that don't have that language in it. They just say the permitted uses of this lease site are, you know, retail and hotel. And that's all they speak to. And so when those sites want to add something, we've got to ensure that we put them through the process up through community development to ensure that they go through the regular permitting process that they need to allow those uses and don't just negotiate in the lease and say, yeah, okay, yeah, you can do restaurant now. It's got to go through the permit process.
Thank you.
Your question?
My next question is there still a lease site association?
There is a waterfront leaseholder association. I've never seen its bylaws or whatever it is that makes it exist, but
it doesn't exist anymore.
Okay. That was my question.
And yeah. There was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric, how many years has the Harbor Department been managing Tideland's lease sites? Give or take.
Since 1986 or 7. We used to be a division of Public Works. And believe it or not, Public Works existed in the same building we're in, along with the Coast Guard. We were a division of Public Works, and the leases were handled up at City Hall. And I'm not sure who handled them up there. But in the early to mid 80s, we became our own department with our own director. Alan Davis was the first harbor director, and the first thing they did was they took all those leases. And it was one of the things that was occurring was they weren't being kept up on because the people at City Hall just didn't have time. They're doing the City Hall stuff. So that, I believe, is when we took back over the leases, managing the leases.
And how many years as director have you been involved in that management activity?
I've been director since 2012.
And Lori, how long have you been active in lease management, in the Tidelands Trust lease management?
2012.
Okay. So in the, to try to simplify my questions, in the last 5 years, let's assume it's five years. In the last 5 years, have either one of you identified some business activity that you thought was lacking or needed on the waterfront? I don't mean you personally necessarily, I mean in your management process.
We've never undertaken any kind of an exercise to try to determine that. Mm-hmm. We've had a number of people and or businesses approach us about things, and Ray Fields being kind of a prime example that said, hey, what about this? And we've either fostered and encouraged that and tried to help them on the direction to make that happen, or if it's something that just wasn't doable, something that was completely outside of the zoning, it wasn't a visitor-serving, marine-dependent thing that the zoning wouldn't allow, we would, you know, tell them, sorry, but thanks for interest, but no, you can't do that. So those sorts of things have been identified, but no, we've never proactively gone out, per se, and tried to identify things that may be lacking, because as I spoke earlier, I think we generally let the market and let our leaseholders decide what's most needed.
And within the allowable uses under zoning, that was a good point, thank you for that, is the Harbor Department, as the manager of the Tidelands Trust lease sites, aware of any impediments to free market development?
I don't get me started.
Excuse me?
Nothing. Just like any business or development, redevelopment, the regulatory requirement, I guess I'm speaking on a not necessarily on somebody coming in and saying, hey, I want to operate a XYZ business at this lease site. I'm not speaking to that. I'm speaking more of a somebody trying to add slips or redevelopment or adding on to their building. The regulatory process, as you know, to go through Planning Commission and City Council and Coastal Commission is quite onerous and not for the faint of heart. So yes, if you want to call it an impediment, yeah, just the normal regulatory process to get approvals for most major things is pretty daunting. Not insurmountable, obviously lots of people do it, but beyond that, I don't think there's any untoward impediment to a business coming in and saying they want to operate out of Rose's Landing and coming to us with some new idea.
Okay. Anything else from the board on this agenda item?
No, I think we've covered it. The one thing that I would like to... No, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. I don't... Unless the board proves me wrong, which would be fine, I don't see that the board is in a position this evening to bring to council for consideration a waterfront leaseholder incentive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is that pretty much our position?
I agree. Let the marketplace decide. Okay. Case by case.
So, Mr. Director, have we put the department in a difficult spot, or are you content?
No, I'm fine with this. I mean, I've gotten some good input, and with the research and whatnot I've done, I think I've got enough to work with. To whether or not we move anything solidly forward to the council is yet to be seen. But no, I've got some good input.
Real quick, I do have at one point, and Gene brought it up too. There was at one time a Embarcadero leaseholder board. I think that the harbor department should explore the concept of creating a business improvement district down there. I really do. And see if it's even feasible, because I think it would be a beneficial thing to the Embarcadero. And look at Sam Luce has done. Now, maybe I'm being naive, but I still feel that it's something to look into.
Lori reminded me of public comment. We do still have somebody in the audience.
Did we not call for public comment on this?
No.
So I failed once more.
Sorry.
No, I'm the one that should apologize. So, well, we won't close the item out without asking for public comment. But we'll do that the last thing. Well, this is our work. This is our work plan element, as Eric reminded us in the beginning. So I'm content. I do think some interesting things came out of this discussion. So we'll... I'll discuss those with Eric, and maybe we'll find ourselves agendizing something a little bit different in the future. So, on agenda item C7, is there any public comment? Ray, you are a patient soul, and I apologize to you.
No, that's all right.
I apologize.
It's only a few more minutes. I figure if I'm here for the evening, that's fine. So, our business idea is kind of in between the last agenda item and this one. You're talking about incentives for new businesses that aren't on the waterfront. You know, we wouldn't have a leasehold, but I liked your discussion of just, you know, we're not marine dependent either. We're on the city street, so I liked your previous discussion of just the business license and then being able to have a new business down there. I think that's great. And the only other comment I want to make, I want to go on the record, we are fully insured with $1 million liability insurance, so that seemed important. So anyway, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your patience.
No problem.
Yeah. And additional information, too, for your additional information about being insured. Amen. Okay. Anything else on this item? Okay. So C8. C8 is Harbor Advisory Board Program for City Council Goals and Objectives. Goal 1, Objective E, Work Program Element 1. Regarding an internal, quote, gut check, end quote, of the Harbor Enterprise Fund cost allocation plan for accuracy. Mr. Director, staff report.
So I don't think I need to go into great detail on what this is about. We know we have a cost allocation, and we've got some concerns about how accurate it is and how old it is. We've kind of been hemming and hawing on this one. One, we were trying to get to our old finance director, Craig Schmollinger, outside of the budgeting process. And when that budgeting process wound down and this, a couple months went on, he left us. And then we had an interim finance director and then no finance director. Now, as of today, we've got Jennifer on board, which is great. Her plate's going to be a little full for a while until she gets up to speed. But now we've got one in place, it'll be good timing to get back to her. So Ron and I in discussing the HAB agenda and for October, November, and figuring out which items to move forward, concurred that a good way to take this forward would be, you know, we kind of know what we want to do. We want to do a gut check, sort of laying out some steps on how to achieve that gut check, and just get Harbor Advisory Board concurrence on it. Those steps being, I know the committee, we've done a fair amount of research into that cost allocation study, but I think sort of re-reviewing it or re-familiarizing ourselves with it and develop a list or a spreadsheet of some questions, concerns, or discrepancies that we want to address and get that done by the end of this year. Bring those questions and concerns to the new finance director, Jennifer Calloway, for discussion, including staff and the Harbor Advisory Board subcommittee members or ad hoc committee members, and get that done sometime in January. And then the results of that bring back to the HAB for input and recommendation in terms of inserting it into the budgeting process for 2018-2019. Probably the two main things that would get inserted into that budget process would be if the HAB were to recommend redoing the cost allocation study. Obviously, there's a cost to that, to have that performed, so that would have to be a budget-approved item. That would be one thing we'd have to bring to council. And the other thing to council, which could cut either way, if we find some significant discrepancies in the cost allocation study that we choose to pursue and press on, it would be, if there were things that were advantageous to the Harbor Fund, they're going to be disadvantageous to the general fund, so we'd have to put that into the budgeting process to see how the council would react to that. And vice versa, there could be things that are disadvantageous to the Harbor Fund and advantageous to the general fund, meaning the cost allocation isn't collecting enough. So those things we would identify and put it into the process. So what I'm looking for is just, you know, if there's any other input or concurrence that the HAB, as the general body, might have on those steps that I lined out, I'll take it. Otherwise, that would be our intent to move forward to that item and get that one done. Short of the city doing a full-on cost allocation, which it's a management partner's recommendation, but so far we haven't had it funded.
Well, you know, Ron?
Let's start at the other end.
Okay.
Just for your drill, if that's okay. Gene? Well, yeah, but this needs to go into the record. So this would be the time for public comment. However, there is no public to comment in the hall at this time, so I'm going to close public comment, and thank you for helping me again. True.
Just keeping you square.
I need all the help I can get.
In review of your cost allocation, your gut check, do you think there's probably 10 items that we need to really look at, or do we want to look at all of them and individually say, hey, what's going on with this one? What do we need to do?
I think there's enough. I don't have a specific number. I couldn't give you. Yeah, I know four more things that I really want to look at. You know, since that cost allocation study was done, there's been enough changes with city services and personnel over those years that my assumption with the cost allocation and how it's been handled is the cost allocation says, you know, you have X number of personnel, it's putting in X number of hours, and every year the finance department updates the cost for those people depending on what their pay and benefits and everything else are, and those numbers just continue to get updated and plugged in. I don't know how much updating of the services part, the level of service we're getting versus what the city's been providing and how staffing has changed. I don't know how that is getting factored in. And I think my biggest question on the cost allocation is, what the assumptions were 10 years ago or 8 years ago, whenever it was done, versus now. Are those same assumptions and are those same levels of services being provided, or more services being provided that aren't being accounted for? Like I said, it could cut both ways.
It's not just a matter of time. It's a matter of who, which tier.
Yeah.
Which compensation. There's a huge difference between tier one and...
And the people and positions that were... The positions that were identified when the cost allocation study was done, some of them are still here. Their names may have changed. Some of them may be exactly the same. Some of them don't exist anymore. And there's new ones that have come in. And I don't know how the cost allocation has been morphed to get at the number that it gets today.
So we can look at some of these cost allocations, but some of these are way over our head. We have no idea how to handle these things. So I'm thinking that we can look at some of these, but staff is going to have to look at others, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, only that the cost allocations, you know, it's, I'm sure, quite a project to monitor it on a yearly basis. I'm sure it would be a monumental task, but on the other hand, there's some things that the city needs to handle administratively, paperwork, payrolls, what have you, and then there's some things that they might have done last year that they don't need to do this year, or that can be reabsorbed back into the harbor office. I don't know. But it just seems there should be a periodic review of the costs that are going back to the city general fund.
I mean, we've got a new, brand new city manager and brand new finance director coming on too. Both of them come from decently long careers in public service, and they may have come. Completely different ways of looking at it from the way the city's been doing in the past. You have no idea yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Lynn?
Has the cost allocation been looked at in the past, over the past 15 years or something? Is it done every 5 years? Is it done every 7 years? Is it done when somebody thinks about it?
I don't know when the one was done before the one we have now. It's a good question. Don't know. I mean, in speaking with our interim city manager and our interim finance director, who's no longer with us, they, as I recall, their general feeling was, you know, the one we were on was, I think, finalized in 2010, but it was most of the data research was done in 2009. So we're pushing 7-8 years on it. Yeah. I think the general consensus from those folks was that's getting a little old, that things should be reviewed more often.
The one before that was 10 plus.
Was it?
As you were stating the dates, you know, trying to get this on for the 2018-19 budget, I just remember having this conversation, I think it was in 2016, saying we need to get it on for the 2017-18 budget. And I just want to stress the importance of us moving this item forward and dealing with this. So I'm glad that we now have two people that we, the city manager and the finance director, you know, we haven't been able to meet, the ad hoc committee hasn't been able to meet with either of those positions to go over this, and I think that that's imperative. And so you started to lay out a timeline, so by the end of the year for us to lay out our go over as a, I assume you with the HAB, but also with a little more focus with the ad hoc committee to go over these items, put together a spreadsheet listing of concerns and different items on there. And then did you say to then try and meet in January with the finance director? Is that what you
yeah, I mean, okay. I don't see a need to bring it back through the whole HAB at this point. I think just the committee, I mean, the research we've done already, I mean, you've already done a fair amount of homework, so it's not all starting from scratch. But we as staff and the committee can do our, continue and sort of refresh our homework on it and identify where the issues are and bring that to the new finance director and potentially the city manager. We'll see where his role is on all this sometime in January, and then if necessary, bring that back through the HAB if there's some sort of direction or recommendation we think we need to make. We'll just see how that process unfolds with the new city manager, new finance director.
And date-wise, when do we need to get a recommendation in so that it's early enough in the phases to be pulled into the process for the budget of 18-19? Yeah, 18-19.
Well, as I said, I kind of laid out, here's the three scenarios or the three budget relative items. One was, I'm kind of telegraphing or assuming, or maybe I want to put words in the HAB's mouth, but you know, we've been recommending that we update the cost allocation study in and of itself and get a new one done. That's got a big budget ramification to it, so that would need to get inserted into the budget process. And in February, March is when us department heads are starting to queue up and get our numbers from finance, you know, get the plug numbers from finance and start developing our budget. So, including finances, because if the cost allocation study is done, I'm assuming it's either going to come from the finance director's budget or the city manager's budget, and they're developing their own budgets as well. So February, March is when that's all getting queued up. So, you know, January is sort of the time to do that with the review with those folks and see if things need to get plugged into their budget. And, you know, who knows where – I just don't know where our two new folks are going to be on this at all. And how much attention they're going to be able to spend on it. It could be a priority. It might not. I just don't know.
Are you looking for another recommendation? Do we need to reiterate that?
We'll take care, okay, we'll take care, okay, of it here. We'll take care of it here. Anything else?
Nothing else.
So just to clarify something you said, Neil, in 2016, this body recommended to the city council that it update its general cost allocation, or its cost allocation program in general, but specifically as it relates to the harbor department. That did not include, in 2016, a harbor department internal, quote, gut check, unquote. That's a 2017 item. So the department, I just want the public to be clear that the department's not remiss in not doing that since 2016. That's a current item. Bill?
Yeah, had that recommendation been carried forward beyond the HAB, it would have manifested itself as a budget item to redo the cost allocation as part of the City Council's budget setting, and obviously it didn't. So. But thank you for defending me.
Well, I think, you know, again, as Neil stated too, and Ron is attested, I'm on the cost allocation committee. You know, we've talked about this for probably almost 2 years, and now we're talking about it again. You know, I have the cost allocation. I have the line items. I sent it to both my associates here. I think we just need to look at a couple of them and make a couple recommendations to the City Council, i.e., the ones that pop up are the legal fees and the public restaurant, the public restroom of $92,000. I mean, I have those line items. I mean, we just need to look at them. We need to see if they're justifiable or not. Because really, Eric has a valid point. You know, if we don't pay $277,000, and it's going to be $277,000, you know, it's going to be a little bit less money in the general fund. It's all one pot. But what we started with this cost allocation is that we have no reserves ourselves to fix our infrastructure. So that's why we're trying to look at this thing, and this is one element that we at least can try to control to get some money for our infrastructure to repair our slips and our infrastructure on the harbor, because the general fund doesn't seem to be taking care of that. So, you know, this is a bigger issue than just cost allocation, but for this discussion here, I highly recommend that we, as a subcommittee, really delve into this and make formal recommendations whether or not we can meet with the finance director or the city manager to bring this up to city council for next fiscal year, period. Because you know what? We've been snowballed. In 3 years that I've been doing this, we've only met with the finance director once, and that was Susan, if you remember. So that's my opinion.
And I can just jump in and speak to the legal fees end of it. So some point, I'm not, well, when the city contracted out for a city attorney, the legal fee section of the cost allocation study, that number went away, whatever that number was that we, for Rob Schultz and his staff, whatever that number was, that got, for a while it was parsed out between Rob and his assistant were parsed out between Harbor Fund, Water Fund, and Sewer Fund, and General Fund on a percentage basis. But when the city elected to go to a contract attorney, all the cost allocation numbers were wiped out. I stopped getting charged that, and now we're getting charged directly from Alisher and Winder on sort of on an hourly accrued basis based on his actual usage of doing harbor stuff. So every time the city attorney does something harbor on a 15-minute per billable basis or whatever it is, they jot down and we're getting charged exactly what.
So that $60,000 is no longer part of your cost allocation that was there at the last figures you gave me?
The whatever the number was in the cost allocation for legal, yes, that's not coming in. That's not in the cost allocation anymore. I still budget what my uses are being for using the contract city attorney now. I still budget for it, but it's a separate line item. It's not coming out of the cost allocation anymore.
Eric, you quite correctly in your staff comments leading up to this, and into this agenda item, commented that an update of the city's cost allocation plan as it relates to the Harbor Department, much less all the rest of the departments, could cut both ways. As a business person and as a taxpayer in the city and as a member of the Harbor Advisory Board, I don't really care which way it cuts, as long as the city's cost allocation plan is factually based and is not based on supposition. And it is my conviction that a great deal of it, as it relates to the Harbor Department, which is my concern, the rest of the city is not directly my concern, is based upon supposition. Not only that, ancient supposition, and perhaps inaccurate. So I'd like to propose a motion. I move the following. Number one, by the end of calendar year 2017, Harbor staff and the budget and the HABS Budget and Finance Ad Hoc Committee perform an in-depth review and analysis of the plan and its elements and develop a list or spreadsheet of questions, concerns, or discrepancies. Number two, staff and committee bring questions and concerns to the new finance director, Jennifer Calloway, for discussion and clarification. Three, results of the meeting with the finance director and staff committee analysis be brought to the HAB in February for input and recommendation into the fiscal year 18-19 budget setting process. So moved and seconded. So discussion? Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None opposed. Carries. Okay, so that brings us to item D, which is declaration of future agenda items. Do any board members, would any board members like to declare an additional future agenda item?
Bill? Clarification, you sent out an email regarding a Back Bay forum. Is that on the agenda? Do you have an agenda date? I haven't seen anything.
I defer to the Harbor director who is organizing that. Our Harbor Department, I should say, who's organizing that.
We're trying to pull you folks to see if we've got any dates.
Yeah, and I monitored this morning, I monitored the city's email and the dates that I sent out that I proposed. The only response that we've received, to my knowledge so far, is Dana, who said that he was good for any of those dates except for the 17th. Well, I asked the question. Yeah.
I missed that question. I thought it was that these are the dates we'll consider, and then we'll get back to you. I will answer tonight.
Oh, okay.
That's why I didn't answer.
Oh, well, then I may have worded it poorly. That I may well have worded it poorly.
Now, I was waiting for my assumption of that email was you guys are going to get back to me.
Oh. Well, you're a careful guy, Bill, so I'm going to assume that I worded it poorly. So if each of you, please, yeah.
I'll get back to you then. I apologize.
Please. No. No apology necessary. So if each of you, please, would respond to the email that went out on your city email site, because that's how we have to do it. We've got to, you know.
It went out October 16th, and if anybody needs it again, then we can resend. But so, I mean, I'll just give you the dates. And these are target dates, potential dates, November 6th or 7th, and that's coming up pretty quick. Probably more better to focus on 15, 16, or 17.
Yeah, and Dana's not available on the 17th. So actually, let's just take a poll. We can do this.
What would they
do? 15 or 16.
Correct.
I can do either. What's the time? Yeah, what's the time?
No, I think earlier. We talked about because we talked about kicking it off at kicking it off at 5:30.
Yeah, we go a little evening ish.
No, I think we said 5:30.
Yeah,
so
5:30
I'm trying to
get
the jump on it. Okay, Neil? Okay, so that's 1 and 2. Lynn?
5:30. Either day.
Okay.
I'll be
gone. But we got two other. We got Owen and we've got
one of the alternates, please. One of the alternates. Okay, can you manage that? Okay, Gene? Okay, 16th.
16th. And you said that was a Thursday, 16th. You said, Neil? 16th is a Thursday?
Correct.
Okay.
And we're targeting on a 5:30 start time.
5:30 time.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thanks. Okay. Does any board member want to declare a future agenda item? Okay. Brings us to E, adjournment. Motion to adjourn.
All in favor.
Need a second? Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you very much. AGP, thank you for your help.